They probably divide the beans with him. So father would be going along with his freight outfit, and night came along, he'd get his horses picketed, get to build his campfire and get his beans naked and corn pone or whatever, biscuits. And then by that time it was time to roll in, so he'd get under the wagon with his blankets, and his first thing you know, he'd hear a horse's hoofs coming up, and hear some lonely traveler would be coming along, and seeing this little campfire blazing away there, he'd come up and pass the time of day. Well, the father would be, Sam, tell him to step down, and we'll have to go over there. There's some beans and stuff over there, some grub, and just help yourself, which he'd do. Well, after he had that taken care of, there was only one thing else to do. Either have to sit out there in the cold by the campfire, or else he'd have to crawl into Dad's blankets along with him. Mm-hmm. Well, cold and chilly nights, you know, he'd tell him, but come on, get in here and let in out of the cold. Whatever he said, whatever, he never got to Helena in his life that he wasn't lousy. Everybody in those days were.
Had lice.
Yes, they would had no place to stay. When they got to their destination, they go to some gambling hall or saloon or something and sit there. That's all they'd have to do. And so when he got to Helena or Fort Benton, first thing he'd have to do was go to the barber shop and take his blankets and his underwear and all that sort of thing and have it all boiled up. Get all set, and knowing full well that after, on the next trip, it would happen again. But he just couldn't avoid it. That's the way
body
it
is. Body lice, huh? Oh, not yes. Bed bugs.
Oh, no, much body lice. But bed bugs were the same way. You hardly went in those days in anybody's house that you wouldn't get them. Bed bugs. Oh, yes, they were very common. I myself, at one time, had the experience of running into those. I went up with a hired man we had, and he was driving some cattle up there, and it was in the heat of the summer. And I, after we'd had our usual feed of very salty ham, and on a hot day, and after you'd hollered your head off and got your mouth full of dust and all that sort of thing, got to the end of the road, well, you'd have this salty ham, which you didn't need. Well, I settled down, and it was dark, and this hired man that was helping me drive along, and the man where we turned in the cattle for the night, said they were going to go out and sleep in the straw, out in the barn. And I was just a boy, so this fellow said, you go in and sleep in my bed. Well, I thought they were being nice to me, so I was tired, so I went in there. Oh, that was right. I made a terrible mistake right there. I could hardly, well, I would just about doze off, and these things would begin to move around over my, and I would catch them and pinch them against the wall. And finally, night went on, and, you know, they were there, kind of a smelly organization, too.
Yes.
And so about 12, 1 o'clock at night, I was tired, and I thought, well, I'm going to can't stand this. So I got up, and I went, laid down on the floor. Mm-hmm. And that's where I slept. I don't know whether the dead drugs got down there or not, but it didn't make any difference. I was too tired. Yeah. And I told this hired man about it the next day, and he'd had himself a nice snooze out in the hay, you know. Mm-hmm. And I suppose he imagined that maybe that was what was going to happen. Yeah. And I told him about that. I thought he'd fall off his horse. He just laughed his head off. Yeah. But you see, what happened, I would get some of those on me.
Sure.
And they probably wouldn't bother me very much. But I'd take them home, bring them home. Mm-hmm. And so Mother would have to get a feather and kerosene and go over the bedsteads and all that sort of thing that trying to clean up after me. So So it's just the way things, that's the way times were.
Yes. They were difficult times, but very interesting times to look back to now, aren't they?
Somebody who died in Great Falls not too long ago, who had been Arthur's teacher, and she used to ride a side saddle from Great Falls out to this little country school. Mm-hmm. She paid you all the sum of $1 a week or $1 a month to sweep floors and build fires.
Yeah. Yeah, I had to go out there and build a fire for
in the school?
Ethel. Yes, the country school. Mm-hmm. It was, we had a country school just only about 300 yards from our house. And the teachers always rode out from Great Falls. Mm-hmm. And this little lady, she was just as pretty as a peach, too. 18 years old and got, I think, $80 a month. And she rode side saddle out there every day all winter long on those cold days. So I fix up the furnace and got fire, the pot-bellied stove,
yes.
Got the things ready for her and swept out at night. And she later on married a well-known man in Great Falls who was an accountant, public accountant, you know.
Douglas Wilson.
Douglas Wilson, yeah. He's
still alive.
Yeah, yes he is.
The boys used to call Arthur Teacher's Pet because he read a great deal, and I guess he did hang around the teacher quite a bit. So
what do you mean by that?
George, they called you Teacher's Pet, but you cured them of that. You rolled up some snowballs and let them freeze, and then the next morning they came and were out there casually throwing these snowballs against the building, and they never called you Teacher's Pet again, did they?
No fire in the schoolhouse.
Well, you see, that dollar I was getting every week, that meant quite a lot to me, and so, because you could do quite a lot with a dollar in those days. And so I figured that Teacher's Pet would be the one and to pick on, so I had to watch my step. I get a snowball in the ear, didn't know it just went.
There were quite a few prominent men in Great Falls that all went to the University of Michigan. Later became doctors, lawyers, dentists.
Cleve Hall, well known. His son is up there in Great Falls now.
He's my attorney now. Yeah. And in the hands of the original owner, which is unusual.
What's the size of your ranch?
Well, we have about 6,000 acres.
6,000 acres.
Mm-hmm. And so the Milk River goes through north half of it, and on the south half, covers a large coulee which is has springs in it, a little cold water springs, water creek going through it.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a bunch of grass, native grass, and it's very good grazing.
Mm-hmm.
Cattle put on a good solid fat.
Mm-hmm. Your mother used to go out on the front porch and look up at the Rocky Mountains and say, mm-hmm. I would look under the hills from whence cometh my strength. My strength mm-hmm. cometh from the Lord. Mm-hmm. And then she would weep a little bit.
Mother always did weep a great deal.
She wept a great deal. She was very
near. Cried when she was mad, and
she
when
was very
she was
near
sad, when she was glad, or when she was lonesome. That's it. She cried all of her life. My father was a large man, and Mother was always a small.
Mm.
See, Sister Inez met Mother Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Mother had, when you met her, Mother was a poor, frightened little old lady that had a lot of sorrow. And
yes.
And I thought she functioned very well in spite of things that had happened to her. Someone who had been so protected all her life.
Mm-hmm. You'd have thought she'd gone all to pieces when your father left.
Mm-hmm. But I don't know, she had a lot of inner strength. And of course, my mother depended so on the Lord, everything. And so that, I think that that was the, it was the Lord who sustained her, you know. And Mother was a very unselfish person. She loved people and she liked to do things for them.
And people liked her.
Humans are watching.
You had sheep there.
Yes, what did you have on the ranch?
Well, my grandfather, Bird, established the ranch up there when, basis of taking up a ranch there because my grandmother had Indian rights there. Mm-hmm. And they ran horses there mainly in the early days. Mm-hmm. And then cattle. And then, of course, my grandfather Bird had both horses and cattle and sheep ranches all the way from the Teton River and up into Canada. Mm-hmm. And he died when my father was 15 years old, but he trained my father in business because he believed that boys should have responsibility at a very early age, sent him out on the roundups when he was just a little boy barely able to ride horseback with some of the men. So Father knew the cattle and the stock business thoroughly. And Father was on the State Livestock Commission for a number of years in Montana, appointed by several different governors.
How did your father get the men to work that worked for him?
I don't know. A great many of the men who worked for us were a lot of the old trappers. There are a lot of French Canadians.
Just moving the water.
They used to trap
up
in the mountains in the winter. In the summertime, they came down and worked on the ranches. And usually the men who did work for us stayed for a good many years. We had men that came and, well, like Alec Bruno, who came there, and then his wife came to cook, this young girl, and Angie was there for about 35 years.
Well, where did you house them then, right there?
Yes, we had a bunkhouse. We used to have some little shacks around there for families.
But you raised their children, sent them off to school and raised
some
them.
Some of them that we liked. Mother had this one family that we had. Angela had a little girl.
You brought up the babies.
And then Donna had three children. And my father dearly loved children. And so there was never anything too much for him to do to please a child. Spoil me badly.
Remember when you took care of the baby, wasn't it? Donna, who was the baby, you took care of her, bathed her.
He used to like to bathe all of us. He'd rub our heads so that it's right. And Don would say he'd take the hide off of us, giving us a bath.
I suppose all these cowboys were real cowboys then.
Oh, yes. The real cowboys, you know, they wouldn't want to milk a cow or anything like that because that was beneath their dignity to do something like that.
But what did they do then?
They just rode after the cattle and branded. It was pretty much, you know, in those days, it was open range a lot. There were fences. Cowboys would go out and pick up your cow, and if she had a calf that wasn't branded, to bring it in and brand it. But of course, they had regular branding in the springtime, and then in the fall, the cattle would be turned loose, and in the fall, they'd round them up and sort the cattle out, the ones that they would be sending to market and those that you would want to feed in the winter.
And then you had sheep herders.
We always put up a lot of hay.
for the cattle that we kept in the winter. Mm-hmm. And my father always provided plenty of feed for animals, because when he hired a man, he would ask him if he ate breakfast. And if the man said he didn't, Dad wouldn't hire him, because he always said that a man had to have food, and a man shouldn't eat unless he had his horses fed first. Mm-hmm. And if we were always able to keep cooks on our ranch, because if men had work that's going to take them away during the noon hour, they were supposed to take a lunch with them. There were no short orders around the ranch at all. And that way we were always able to keep a cook. Mm-hmm. And a lot of these big ranches, they had cooks coming and going all the time, because men would just keep coming in. Mm-hmm. And you couldn't expect to hold a cook to do that. And I think where you were out so far in the country, the people who worked for you, they were a part of your family. Mm-hmm. And the ranch was our ranch. They felt like they belonged.
Mm-hmm. So. Did the family then have a dining room of its own, and the ranch had the
cupboards? In the early days, we had a big cookhouse where the men ate, and then the family in the house. And then later on, when we had fewer men, we ate out in the cookhouse with the men.
And even when our
family bought for the ranch, the same menu was always in both houses. The man who cut the meat, if it's going to be steak, he cut steak for both houses. Things like that, because my father didn't believe in eating something he didn't feed his man.
About how many cowboys did you have?
Well, at one time my father ran 12,000 cattle. So we used to have quite a few cowboys at one time.
When you say ran, that's an expression, I think, that's from Montana.
Yes.
Just what does it mean?
Well, it means to operate a large ranch and to care for that many cattle.
I see. And how about the sheep? You know, at one time, I think we were in Wyoming going to work among the Arapaho, and the sisters had some kind of a sickness in their house. I didn't feel we should stay there. So somebody offered us a sheep herder's wagon. And then some of the cowboys came and said, don't go in there. He said, this area has Rocky Mountain ticks. You better pack your stuff and go back home, or you'll get sick here. Well, we saw that. We went to the inside, saw how it all looked like, see. But priest said,
if they were clean, I don't suppose.
The priest said, we'll clean it. We'll get a fumigated. We'll clean it out. We'll lose some shots. But it didn't seem to me to be worth it. I mean, our life and death didn't depend on that, nor our maintenance. So we didn't stay there. We went to.
Well, you had sheep herders who were clean. You'd just as soon stop in at their wagon and have a cup of coffee out of their coffee pot, and then you would have other sheep herders that you wouldn't think of having a cup of coffee.
They would take the lemon pie out and dust it every day.
No. We used to have, there was an old fellow by the name of George Miller at one time who had operated a ranch someplace himself in the country, and that was not his right name, but the name that he went by. And in the early days, there were a lot of men that came out to, they had a past, but you never knew what their past was.
Yes.
At all. You didn't ask any questions. But it seemed that in old George, as he got older, he couldn't see so well, and the job was becoming very hard for him. And I remember, and he was so dirty. I came home for a visit, and when I arrived, Father said, oh, you should have been here. He says, you really missed something. You should have seen old George. He said, you wouldn't have known him. He was so clean. Well, they brought him, and old George did like a lot of these other men. They'd work all year and never go to town, and go to town and stay a week. And then you'd have to go to town and pay their hotel bill and take them home until next year. And it's what he would do with his money. And
Sue George, and this wasn't the first time that it ever happened that Dad had pensioned off a lot of these old fellows that lived around there. Mm-hmm. And that was before old age assistance and no county poor farm in Glacier County. So a lot of these old fellows just lived around your ranch until they died and did chores and things like that. You pay them a small wage, and that to them was home. Mm-hmm. And we had a full blood Indian boy that liked to drink a little bit, and so when they went to old George's funeral, why, mother and father, and Dick, and Henry Bostwick, the deaf and dumb boy, and this Charlie after Buffalo. Mm-hmm. Well, mother always felt sorry for everyone, so she started to weep, and Charlie after Buffalo said, "Poor old George has no one to cry for him." So he and mother proceeded to do so. So I laugh at that. I had a good story to tell me that I should have, that I'd really missed something by not seeing old George all dressed up.
Who made up your household then, Dorothy? Did the cook, was she part of your family?
Yeah, well, we had several houses around on the ranch. We had a cook house and bunk house, and usually
bedroom in the cook house.
And the cook house had a bedroom for the cook, her husband and family. So we provided places for your help to live.
I was on one of those large owned farms up in North Dakota. Mm-hmm. And see, there are a great many Scandinavians there. Mm-hmm. And we at the table, the farmhands all ate at the table too. Mm-hmm. And of course, most of them couldn't speak any English, so they'd lift themselves and reached for things, so that the word Swedish reach is still used in many parts of North Dakota. If you reach around, you know. There, they all ate the same table, but they slept, well, like an addition to the house. Mm-hmm. The houses were frame buildings. They, see, they were all squatters up there at the time that I first went up to North Dakota. I went up there with one of my friends, Sister Brasilia.
Well, I was sad, but I didn't realize that we had so many buildings at the ranch, and the renters and things that we had after my father died neglected things and didn't stitch in time, say he was nine, and they didn't do any repairs. So it was a matter of doing some extensive repairs and painting and things like that. And when I took a contractor out to put new roofings on, there were 18 buildings to be re-roofed. I didn't realize that there were that many.
In the olden days, every traveler of distinction came out to the, to the Bird Ranch. Geologists.
Well, there were, it's like there were not many places for them to stay. And
well, they'd go on their way to get there.
One of the thing that used to happen when we were little to this day, I still love jelly beans. Mm-hmm. And when we were, these Cree families that worked for us, they were up in the mountains and they lived, and this is the nearest place to get married was to go down to Sholo, which is quite a distance. So the early priests and the Methodist missionary were the first two ministers up there. And they also acted as registrars, which is sending reports of a birth or a death or a marriage. And because there weren't other places to go, and we hired more men than a lot of the other ranches, and they would come to our ranch and hold services and marry them and so on. And it was always kind of a joke with us. We had an old man by the name of Pelchy, French Canadian, and he and his wife had lived together about 35 years or more. Well, now these young couples were all getting married, and so Dad said to Pelchy, "Pelchy, why don't you get your old woman and marry her? The priest is here." And Pelchy says, "Oh, I'm just getting used to him first."
He lived with
him.
Well, I'm just getting used to him first. But he used to call he for she, you know.
Yes.
I'm just getting used to him first. So whenever we'd see a couple living together out of wedlock, we always use that expression, and he's just getting used to him first. And I remember this old Father Damiano, when he'd come, he always had a little black bag. And Eloise and I would see who could get out to get his bag and bring it in for him. And he had jelly beans in it. That he'd give us. So they felt welcome regardless of what their religious denomination was. Even one of the Mormons, the law was passed against plural marriage this way. They came through our ranch because they knew that they could camp, and it's on their way to Canada. They were always welcome.
And then on occasion, Helen Clark would come out, and she and your mother were great friends, and they would read to each other, wouldn't they? And philosophize.
Well, you see, Miss Clark, she was one of those persons who, I think that is an interesting thing. That you could almost do a story on it of some of these early families, what kind of men were was the makeup of the person. The higher caliber man educated his children.
I won't step on
it. So, when did I start to tell you about Miss Clark? Oh, I think a story about the caliber of men who married Indian women would be interesting. To do.
And most of those were Blackfoot Indians, weren't they? And
yes.
In my knowledge of Indians, I think the Blackfoot rank higher in many ways. And then
they were very proud, and I guess very arrogant, and they felt a little better than... they looked down upon some of the other tribes.
Were they a branch of the Sioux?
No.
No. The Sioux was another, the difference between the Germans and the French, you know.
Yeah. Well, let's see. The Sioux, were they members of the Longhouse?
The Longhouse or Iroquois.
Iroquois.
They're way out east. The Sioux are a different language.
This is Helen Clark. First.
She's half blood.
She studied for Anna Sarah Bernhardt and wanted to go on the stage, and but of course at that time her family thought that any refined person did not go on the stage. Didn't. But she could read a novel and in such a way that you just imagine that you were on the stage and watching a most exciting play.
What was her name?
Helen P. Clark.
Well, the Clark family ranks very high in Montana, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Were they in any way related to Lewis and Clark, that expedition?
No, I don't know that they were any distant cousins or something that sort. A number of her, in her family, they were army people and went to West Point. Her father had a very quick temper, and he was expelled from West Point for dueling. And over where the Henry Sieben Ranch is near Helena Prickly Pear Canyon, her father was killed there in an Indian fight. And I think one of his sons. And then Horace Clark was just a young boy and defended his mother and sisters from the Indians. Mrs. Tom Dawson, that is Isabel Clark, Helen P. Clark. And Miss Clark never married at all because, as she said, she couldn't get the man she wanted. She wasn't going to take the first man that asked her. And there were great, now Warren Toole and Louis Sanders, who were prominent men in the state, they were, when she taught school, they were boys in her class, and they were always very fast friends. And she lived in Helena, and when I was in graduate school down in Denver, I went into a little restaurant one day, and
there was only one seat vacant, and there was an Episcopal minister sitting there, and I went by and asked if I might occupy the other chair of his table, and so we started talking, and he said that he had lived in the city, the richest city in the world for its size, and I said, "Oh, Helena, Montana." He said, "Yes." Well, then as we talked, I discovered that he also knew Miss Clark, and he said he always remembered her as a tall, elegant-looking young woman. She